Okay, so we've had a good day. Geospatial track started this morning, quite a few presentations and the like. My objective is to try to bring some amount of summary to that and hopefully motivate the cross-project discussion about geospatial. I am an Apache member, but I'm also really here more so from the Open Geospatial Consortium, which is my day job, right? So you'll see some opportunities, I think, for projects to really get involved. But, you know, my interest has been to say geospatial is important. There's a lot of open source. Let's work with Apache as well to take that on. So kind of the topics in that conversation then are, let's take a look at a variety of projects that are implementing geospatial. I will give some, you know, discussion then, especially about topics of geospatial, space and time, APIs, and coding standards from a standards perspective, but informed by the discussion that we've had here today, and then end with the beginning of a discussion about what coordination might we undertake in the community, and we can have that discussion here, and we can also take that into the birds of a feather that happens at 7 o'clock in a room that I've now forgot. It's on the schedule. So we've done this a couple of times, going back to the big data conference in Vancouver. We had a geospatial track. We had a birds of a feather. One outcome of that was a mailing list was established, geospatial@apache.org. If you're interested, join that. We did a session in Seville, ApacheCon Europe, and here we are today, both with the geospatial track, birds of a feather, this evening. But this is not the only place. Well, first off, it's right now the most important place for open source geospatial, of course, because we're here and we love Apache. And so these are the projects that I've noted that were actually included in discussions in both 2016 and 2018 that are actual project. Two of them, I think, are incubating. There's obviously a lot more involved in that. There's also Apache projects extended for geospatial, if you will, both, well, in particular outside of here. There was mentioned earlier of GeoTrellis is not on here. I should have put GeoTrellis on here. That's certainly a good one. Obviously extending Spark, Accumulo, Jenna Fuseki Uema, which I don't know anything about to speak of. There's also other organizations that you should know about that are promoting open source for geospatial, Location Tech, which fits into Eclipse, and OSGeo, which tends to be a bit more of a standalone. And then, of course, there's lots of companies that are offering geospatial OS open source through their own mechanisms. Like, so it's a rich world. My perspective is on the standards aspect of it. So, you know, our organization loves open source, but we also have members who really are wedded to that proprietary code and actually play like in between that too. So it's a very rich world. The need, I think, here to talk about open source and open standards, the benefits, if you will, one is it increases code quality. We had a bit of that discussion this morning in terms of having a template or a way to think about the code that you're implementing based upon previous developments that people have done for, you know, decades and centuries in some cases, those space-filling curves, for example, reduce the development effort. So if you know exactly what, you know, that standard, that code is based on that standard, you'll have a lot quicker ability. Interoperability based upon stable, proven APIs and encodings. We'll talk about APIs and encodings. And then the other advantage from users, that is assemblers, integrators, and the like, is the interchangeability of software components based upon open standards, plug and play of the open source that comes and meets kind of the same need, but interoperability. So hopefully that somewhat makes the case of why we see the relevance. And there's also, we regularly talk about open source, open standards, and open data as a third one that mixes into that. One plug for OGC, we're a not-for-profit global forum, developers and users, spatial data products and services. We do have a consensus program about international standards. We also have an innovation program mentioned earlier. The testbed activity falls under there. We're looking at, what is the next and after next with respect to geospatial technology and where should we take that. I will show you both some of the existing standards and some of the ones that are under development and coming out real soon. With a more web-friendly front, but we do have an established base, 900 products registered to be implementing OGC standards. So, the notion that we've got open source, we've got open standards. What open standards are relevant to that open source? It's wonderful when you prepare a presentation last night. And then you're going to get to a slide that, based on a conversation earlier, is going to be somewhat controversial. So in the beginning, all was simple. Everyone agreed the world was flat. The implication here is that you should move beyond that. Of course, we had a great conversation this morning that for many use cases, the world is flat is just fine. And so take that into account. Recognize that the world is round. Some of you may see that more than others. But many of you may not need to deal with spherical geometries and spherical Earth. It depends upon your use case and your air factor. Factors and the like. The key thing is, as a developer and somebody who's delivering geospatial software to somebody else, you make an informed choice about whether or not you need to have a flat Earth or not. Issues about projections obviously are important. These all show non-polar projections. Sometimes the poles are interesting. Sometimes flying over the poles are interesting. The other topic that comes up on a regular basis is that everybody thinks there's only one latitude and longitude. You define a latitude and longitude based upon a model of the Earth, and it's kind of flat, but we make these approximations by doing ellipsoids in order to achieve that. Some of them are actually spheres. Some groups only do sphere. That's a good approximation. An ellipsoid, which is a little bit squashed, as you can see, is a better approximation, but there's multiple approximations. And so if you choose a different ellipsoid or a sphere, you get a different latitude for the same location. And the issue is that too many builds, right? It's also true for longitude and for height. None of those are unique unless you identify the coordinate reference system that you're using. You may get away with choosing one and using that and sticking with it. That's fine. But be informed that you may run into others. There's a rich discussion about what coordinate reference systems are. They're essentially made up of a coordinate system, the mathematical part. So either the lat-long approach or spherical or polar coordinate systems. Why is that? It's over on that side. That is a weird. I don't know why I did that. So, kind of the math, it's coordinates, it's coordinate systems, but then you're going to anchor it to some part on the Earth that actually realizes that coordinate system to make it a coordinate reference system. And you actually you declare points in your coordinate reference system to be a certain lat long and the like to get that. So there's all science. It's really well done. The Earth moves. We have to update it. There's a big one coming in 2024 in the United States where we're updating WGS in a big way. CRS implementation in the past has been confused, but it's getting better. This surprised me. My background is remote sensing. I do this stuff all the time. I walked into a meeting, and there was a mapping guy that said, the most important thing you're going to find out, this is like 20 years ago, that lat-long and long-lat is not agreed upon, right? And sometimes it gets confused, and sometimes people say they're doing it one way, and they actually send the data to you in another way. It's just really incredible to me that was going to be a problem. It still kind of is, but it's getting better. Those that didn't even specify a CRS, or at least recognize they need to say what CRS they're using, it's a great use case to use one, but at least let us know what you're using. Access orders getting better. There's an OGC spec called CRS Well-Known Text. that actually was, you know, part of the sources of the problem in some way. It didn't define access order, but there is an imminent release of OGC CRS well-known text 2.0.1. Actually, the big one was 2 that actually happened about 2 years ago, to go to well-known text, CRS well-known text version 2 years ago. And this is propagating through all of the different code bases that are out there, both proprietary and open source. There's a barn raising on GDAL and Proj going on right now. If you know those projects, they're going to address this problem. They're going to fix that. There's others that are, you know, been far ahead of that. The Apache SIS group is way ahead, and so they've already done this. But this is really important, and it'll clean up a bunch of problems. An example, you know, this is a dynamic CRS, so being able to describe a CRS that moves. It's pretty simple stuff. So we figured out we've got a coordinate reference system. You may use one. Choose one. That's great. Let us know what it is. Geometries. You know, want to define points, lines, polygons. This is out of, this is now, a 20-year-old standard called Simple Features. Been updated a variety of times, but gives you this set of structure for the geometries that that you need. Simple because it's in 2D, and it uses, it's got some other simplifications associated with it, but has become essentially the go-to for, you know, the Simple Features query that we've seen in the earlier presentations today. Relations, again, my background before really getting involved in OGC remote sensing, we debated for, you know, a long time about how to define these terms. Equals, touches, overlaps, contains. There's actually this set of relations has got an incredible depth of topological math behind it, and you would be silly to use anything other than this, because this is the way the world is, right? And it's been proven then. And so it's available, again, defined in Simple Features access specification. It's also been put into GeoSparkle. Yeah. Overlaps and intersects. That's a good question.
It's blindly obvious that I'm missing something.
Well, intersects actually and creates a separate polygon in the middle. Yeah.
Okay, it's not obvious to me from the slide.
That is a good point.
A and B overlap.
Yeah.
The intersection is.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Now I get what you're saying.
Within,
you're
within
defining the middle part, not the outer.
Within is the form of overlap.
I found a good way to consider these as well is how you would query it. If you could imagine the data, think about how you would execute a query. And to me, it seems a bit more logical.
All of these are, you know, defined as specific query types,
right, exactly,
to be used. And
exactly.
We saw those earlier today,
yeah.
Julian's presentation.
Yeah.
It's interesting in temporal database, there's an analogous set of temporal relations.
Yep.
Just one.
Yeah.
These all defined with noisy data, basically how you deal with error bars around your data?
The theory behind it is not. There's a whole lot of study about how to do uncertainty in those kinds of queries, which I'm not sure we've got a standard way to do that, but there's a lot of research to go after that. Is there uncertainty with Spark? No, I'm not even going to touch that one. Yeah. Speaking of time, there is the notion of spatial-temporal geometry and the notions of prisms and paths through that and the like. And then the three examples that I have here of the types of queries. One is simply tell me where it's at and where it's moving towards. That's the first axis. The other one is I've got a polygon somewhere in space. Tell me if it intersects it, if the trajectory intersects it and the like. So the semantics for that one. The other one that's really kind of sweet is two moving trajectories and what is the nearest approach. So you have a way to ask that question in a well-understood way in terms of interoperability. How you do that calculation is, you know, left to the reader, as I'll say. Yeah. So there's some really good implementation of those out of Japan, Hitachi, Tokyo University. I hope it's Tokyo, not KO. Japanese Tokyo, doing traffic studies and the like after the nuclear tsunami. One of the things to me I think is really interesting has come out of a lot of research. We had a bit of a discussion about this earlier today with the, I guess the Korean guys talking about Uber and their grid. So there's a set of data structure called discrete global grid systems. It is a spatial reference system that uses a hierarchical tessellation of cells to partition and address the globe. These, I think, are really handy. I think it gets rid of the issues about coordinate reference systems and poles and date lines, and it allows us to work with data without having to worry about it being projected, which, by golly, we ought to be able to do that by now. So one of the key things in the first step is choosing the cell shape of the grid system. For a global grid, where you're putting these grids, you're approximating a sphere. There's only three that work: square, triangular, and hex. There's a lot of good reasons for choosing different ones. We mentioned earlier the discussion by Uber about why they chose hex. It has a lot to do with how many neighbors and how the neighbors are all the same. You then want to put some index on that, including, for example, space-filling curves to be able to get after that, to give you an address. That gives you some 1D array for efficiency for query processes and the like. This is straightforward math. This is patent land. There's a whole bunch of patents down here, so watch out, buyer beware. They're cool. Yeah.
No, that's not cool.
That's not cool. So we are, from a standards point of view right now, we've got what we call an abstract specification to describe these, and we're collecting examples of discrete global grids that meet this set of requirements for well-behaved discrete global grids. I think it'll be really valuable as we do a bunch of real cool stuff. So that's one to look forward to. This is when I say I've talked about this. There's a whole bunch of stuff about features, images, and semantics, and observations, and measurements, and all that kind of stuff that I'm not going to talk about. It's really cool stuff, but I want to talk about APIs and encodings. So we've been around for 20 years, 25 years, something like that. The standards that been deployed, especially for spatial data infrastructures around the globe, using web map tile service with an extra E. With feature service, coverage service, a set of encodings and the like, hundreds, thousands of services, hundreds of thousands of data sets, an existing baseline. It works well for those applications. We know we need to improve. In particular, we've been working with W3C. There's a group called the Spatial Data on the Web has produced a best practices. Our buddy Ed has been the champion of this from the beginning. So thank you, Ed Parsons. So there's a set of best practices, kind of looks like this. I'm not going to go into the details on this. One of the key things I want to point to, though, is, convenience APIs and the emphasis on revamping. In particular, if you know Web Feature Service, was addressed in a couple of presentations earlier. It is one of the workhorses for accessing feature data from GIS. The current version of that is WFS2. It is an OGC web service. It has really atrocious things like the name of the operation in the URL and a variety of other things that, we now realize we're not the best web design. So here we are. We're looking on Web Feature Service 3.0. This is being developed from an open API tool set with resources as the key. So we've got a set of operations that have to do with the landing page, the API definition and conformance clauses, a key set that is about the collections of features. So those are really resource oriented, and then the actual feature collections and features. And so this is an existing draft spec that's out there. It was released for public comment in July, after a series of hackathons and about five or six implementations. We're letting it mature, and right now the open there's a request for comments on this spec that's open until the end of December, and then we'll see where we're at and move forward. But this represents a significant change in the evolution of OGC Web Services, and if that's of interest to you, you should pay attention to WFS3. It'll probably affect WMS and WMTS, although I always contend WMTS always was resource-focused. We're yet to see what's going to happen with coverages, but coverages and resources is a whole big question. If you like IoT, there's a standard out there called Sensor Things. It's all about things. It's essentially our sensor web enablement standards put on an IoT stack, and much more RESTful, has a very simple data model for a thing, and the observations on that uses a variety of protocols, including MQTT. Remember, I'm giving you some APIs and encodings. One really interesting encoding right now, it's been out actually for a while, it's scaling is the big deal now with GeoPackage. GeoPackage is essentially a SQLite implementation for geospatial data. It's been approved for 3 or 4 years now, something like that. 5 years, yeah, I could believe that. But it's very efficient, and it has a whole lot of data types in it that you can package a whole bunch of stuff. People are doing 500 gigabytes of, all the building footprints in the United States. Somebody took and Microsoft distributed all the building footprints, and somebody put it in a geo package. It's about, some really good stuff. Cloud optimized GeoTIFF is not part of this. That is a GeoTIFF, which is separate from this SQLite implementation. There's a lot of discussion about cloud optimized GeoTIFF. GeoTIFF is, you may know, has been a standard in the wild for a long time, and we're cleaning that up and putting it out, baselining it with some changes that Frank Warmadan and others have recommended for years. And then we're going to look at cloud optimized GeoTIFF, which involves some really good labels that come out of GDAL and the like for that. Separate topic, but very interesting. Does involve, for example, this kind of tile pyramid discussion. Very handy spec called Tile Matrix Set, started out in the WebMap Tile service. It is a 2D map projection with a tessellation grid and a resolution pyramid and the like. But it's been busted out of WMTS because we're reusing it in several places, including GeoPackage. Let me finish off with this by talking about something that's happening dynamically right now. We've spoken a few times about NetCDF. NetCDF has a long history, and there actually used to be a huge fight, maybe there still is a little bit, between HDF and NetCDF until NetCDF 4 was written to be an HDF 5 implementation. So now when you use NetCDF, the data model and the like, HDF5 helps you. HDF comes out of the supercomputing community, NCSA. Lots of libraries, lots of routines, very useful with lots of big data. And so NetCDF comes out of the weather community. It comes out of UCAR, NCAR, and the like. So that's one application. But what we're seeing now is HDF. Which is on its way to become an OGC standard, being implemented in like point clouds and multi-sensor point clouds and the like, as well as a couple other communities, one based on bathymetric data and another with image format with a GDAL interface. This is really going to be interesting. It's kind of hard to say where it's... Well, it's not hard to say. They've got a working group to approve it as an OGC standard. We're in the middle of that. Last topic is lots of good stuff going on with 3D geovisualization. There's a couple of particular 3D visualization specs that have been put out as OGC community standards, one called 3D Tiles, which is most closely related to Cesium. And the other one, I3S, which is most closely associated with Esri. And they're looking at each other and working with each other and converging to some degree. But the ability to do 3D visualization and fly-throughs of, for example, urban scenes with real geometry and the like, so we're doing that. Okay, so that's my little, perspective on, you know, standards that obviously we discussed earlier today, and a couple of that may be of interest to you in the future. I think the discrete global grid spec is going to change the world, and that is probably some kind of, yeah. Change the description of the world. Yeah. And that's all that really matters, right? So the last chapter here is what might we do in terms of coordination across projects with respect to geospatial data. This is a quote I go back to on a regular basis from the guy who hired me some time ago. Interoperability seems to be about the integration of information. What it's really about is a coordination of organizational behavior. This is kind of like community over code in some way. This is about, I don't know, whatever that means. I'm still trying to figure that out. Sorry. It was new to me this week. But what it means is, and if you heard the lady this morning, the woman this morning on the DevOps, she was spot on about, it's not just a people issue that's hard. It is a technology that's hard, and we got to do both of those. That's really, I had to update this, based on what that. So we had a, I already showed that. So what next? What next is... we had a discussion, that was our agenda for today. What next is, we had a discussion yesterday, and so many of you got a t-shirt, maybe all of you got a t-shirt, right? And it's got this, I look at this and see a topological map of a subway. I don't know if that's what anybody else sees in this, but I'm like, we're geo guys though, so maybe other people didn't see that, but that's what I saw. And then what I did was circle the stations of the ones we've talked about. And so what we need is a geospatial line. It might be, the Victorian line, or what's the new one? What's the new one? The Elizabeth line. Well, we like geospatial better. So what I did was put in there. So the notion is that there would be some organization cross-cutting, voluntary, just discussion group kind of thing that kind of is this geospatial coordination. So this is a list of items that came out of a discussion by about five of us yesterday, some Apache board members. Martin was there, Julian was there, Lewis was there, I was there, yeah. And so some ideas. So Apache Project Actions, add geospatial as a category in your project's dope file. Did you know you had a dope file? That seemed to be... Do you know what it means? There you go. That seemed to be a surprise yesterday. But and you have the ability to go in there and change your dope file. And so here's a control term.
If you don't have a dope file, you get dope swap.
That's better than, yeah, right. So if you think you're doing geospatial in your project, go put geospatial in your dope file. Identify somebody in your project, or maybe all of your project, to join geospatial at apache.org. Left that off. But maybe there's somebody in your project that is really kind of the go-to person for geospatial. We've got that geospatial mailing list. The thought was, what should we use it to do? Geospatial events announcements was something. Communicate new geospatial standards was suggested. I actually took that action then. I'm not, there's other geospatial standards organizations as well. Encourage that as well. So my role would probably be to do both, though, wouldn't it? It'd be anything that I think is relevant, probably I should put there with respect to geospatial standards on that list. Promote your project. If it implements OGC standards, you can promote your project by going to this page and registering it. And so you get more outreach for your project. We also have the notion of a reference implementation for OGC standards. And so if you, in fact, want to pursue that even further, you have to be compliant, and you have to do a couple other things that are pretty, you have to make your code available, go figure. you could be a reference implementation, which gets you even more promotion. Co-locate an Apache Roadshow at an OGCTC meeting, and there's discussion of establishing a Apache VP for relations with OGC, patterning off of the one that exists in Apache now for W3C. So, guys, is it we're there? Did I capture generally what you heard? Is there other things I missed? Lewis, Julian, Martin? Was a fair summary? Or? Thank you. Appreciate it. What do you think? Is this of value? People that are in other projects in particular? Does it motivate you to want to get involved?
Sure. I have data, and lots of data has geo-coordinates in it, and that are in a wide variety of coordinate systems, not convertible to each other. I'd really rather convert them to each other by going by way of a standard description.
And projects you're working on? Or?
Well, I'm working on Apache Daffodil, which is a data description language, but the project I'm thinking of is the application of that,
yeah.
Where the data we're parsing is full of all kinds of different
including
a flat Earth one, by the way.
and that's okay. That's okay.
It's called tangent to Earth plane at point. It's like, okay, pick a point here.
Yeah.
Tangent plane, now it's not a spherical.
That's what it is. Cool. Make sure you talk to the guy right behind you who leads the SIS project, which provides translation between coordinate systems.
Oh, perfect. That's what I
think. Yeah, there you go.
Exactly
right. Other discussions?
I'm surprised to see so, sorry, Julian, I'm surprised to see so many people in the room. I think that yesterday, there's a lot of other good content at Apache, and it's very encouraging to see so many people at the geospatial track. I think it's testament to the fact that you've hosted the geospatial track over a number of years now, George.
We're building that interest amongst there. And we got the best room, so.
Yeah. I was going to say something kind of similar, which is, you know, I got involved in Apache because I wanted to bring this cool stuff to a wider audience. Because this technology has been expensive and exclusive, and companies, you know, only companies that really needed geospatial had it 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's nice that this is in Apache because we bring it to, it's such cool stuff, I want everyone to be able to use it.
There you go.
And then if we create these projects, then, you know, the high-end companies can contribute their expertise and bring that cool technology to a wide audience.
That's a good point. We have, one of the things that the Apache board members regularly tell me is that they're not going to do anything in terms of, they're waiting for the projects to say, yes, this is something that is needed. So, for example, approving an Apache VP for OGC relations is dependent upon people from the projects writing their board member in Apache and saying, yes, that's a good idea. So, and then we need somebody to staff that position. Because it ain't me, because I'm on the other side. So, there's a lot of good candidates. All right. We do have, yeah.
You mentioned that there's areas in geospatial where there's patent activity. Can you just quickly tell me the OGC's patent policy? Is it reasonable and non-discriminatory?
Yes, that's for our intellectual property, reasonable, non-discriminatory. None of our standards require a fee to implement, and open, non-discriminatory, that kind of thing. We also then do a regular patent call where we require members to say, if you know of a patent that is relevant here, tell us about it. You don't have to own that patent, but tell us about it so that it can be understood. And, you know, sometimes the right thing is to work with them, and other times design around it. You know, there's a variety of choices when patent have been identified, but it's a key part of making sure our standards are not encumbered by any essential patents is a big part of what we do.
So avoid the Unisys GIF fiasco.
The which fiasco?
The GIF fiasco.
Well, yeah. There's a several to point to.
Yeah.
Rambus is the one that, that's the court case that, yeah. So we have a BOF at 7 in Vizier A. So if you're interested in more discussion, come there. I think lightning talks are up in a few minutes downstairs. And so thank you all for coming. Thanks for everybody that helped present and organize.